I don't think I can do this season anymore. I'm just kind of done.
Already?
Ish with
this was the third episode of the season.
This
Richard.
Was like one of like this is alternative factor bad almost. Like
no, it's not.
I mean, it's not as bad as the alternative factor, but like if we have a list of like my top five worst episodes, it's like alternative factor, cat's paw, what little girls are made of, and like this one.
You really don't like this episode.
I hated this fuck. Okay, I have to say. So my dad was a, you know, watched Star Trek when it was on because he was like 14 when it aired.
Sure, the perfect age.
And, you know, he actually, you know, the few episodes of Star Trek I'd seen, you know, he'd shown me when, you know, the last couple seasons of Next Generation I watched with him. And, you know, I was around the age he was when, you know, the show was on. So, that you know, that was great. So I was talking to him about, you know, oh, we just watched the episode with, you know, Spock's brain. And he's like, oh, man, did you see the episode with the Indians? And I'm like, no. He's like, it's awful. You know, Kirk loses his memory and he becomes an Indian and they call him Kirok. And I'm like, that can't be a thing. They wouldn't do that to me. They do that.
I can say that this is a classic episode of the original series, but I don't think that the Paradise Syndrome is all that bad. It's an average episode, and I honestly don't understand all the antipathy it gets.
Well, because it's shitty.
Not saying it's a good episode.
I mean,
but
my main question about the episode, is it racist or is it really racist? Because I'm not sure, but I think it's really racist.
Well, this is one question I have. I mean, it's an interesting concept, I will say. I think that the concept of this kind of race of beings that are seeding planets to save cultures is an interesting concept. I do, yeah.
Oh, no, that's like, because I personally don't like that theme. I mean, I've seen that in, you know, certainly like in the film Mission to Mars, which I saw in theaters, like, that's the big twist of that. No, it's a common trope in sci-fi, and I've never been into it.
I'm not really sure what relevance or purpose it serves in this particular episode.
Well,
this episode feels to me like, because, you know, I watch this episode and I sit there and I think, okay, but why are these Native Americans?
Yeah.
What purpose does having them be Native Americans serve? And I don't think it really serves a purpose. It could have been any weird alien culture. And it just feels like they got some studio time for some teepees and Native American props and costumes.
That's it.
And just didn't want to spend the money.
That's it.
To
it seems like it
come
was,
up with yeah. a different alien culture. And you know what? That might actually just be the case because they were making this on a budget of like $140,000 an episode at this point.
Yeah,
so
I figured they raided the you know, they were looking through some extra costumes. They found a ton of Indian costumes and, you know, it was the late 60s. That was a thing people were interested in. I mean,
well, I think that's, you know, that's actually really interesting. And I think that's something that we can talk about.
Yeah, the plight of the Native American started to be very talked about during the late 60s, along with all of the other, you know, civil rights
issues. It started to be talked about. I think there was a lot of interest in, you know, obviously, you know, hippiedom was at its height at this point. And protests against the Vietnam War were pretty much at their height at this point. And so there was a lot of cultural unrest. I think a lot of people were feeling unsettled. And there definitely was a strain in this in American culture in the late 60s, which was basically, oh, wouldn't it be great to go back to the land? And, you know, those American Indians, they were just living the life and all this kind of stuff, which, you know, is not really true.
No.
But it fed into something that I think was going on at that point in American culture. And so,
and certainly, you know, if you look at historically how, you know, Indians have been treated,
absolutely,
you know, who was the actor? Someone won an Academy Award and was very into like Native American rights and like actually, you know, said instead of his speech, he brought a Native American onto the stage.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember if that was later or not. My parents, you know, definitely.
I think you might be making that up.
My parents told me about it.
I think your parents might have been making that up.
Good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other interesting thing about that as well, I think, is that it turned Star Trek into a Western. I mean, an explicit Western, right? Because that was always kind of the concept of the show. That's how Gene Roddenberry always described it to the suits at the network, was it was wagon train to the stars.
Yeah.
And this really turns it into an explicit Western with Native Americans and all the things that go along with that.
And that's fine. And I can definitely, I mean, having it be a race that's seeding things or whatever. Anytime there's been a, you know, a costumer like this, they've just had some random excuse. Oh, you know, the Starfleet guy, Kate, went back, you know, there and told them about Hitler. Or, you know, they dropped a book over there or whatever. Like, it's some reason that's, you know, it's as good as any other reason why it's that. It's just they need an excuse to have, you know, why there are, you know, Native Americans in this. I was fine with that. But what I'm not...
As a justification for that, yeah.
Yes. What I'm not fine with is I obviously have a couple of issues with, you know, the white man being proclaimed a god and knowing, you know, and being, well, you know, all of that stuff.
That like, is.
Let's say it's problematic. I mean, the Netflix description is... Trapped on a planet whose inhabitants resemble American Indians, Kirk loses his memory and is proclaimed God. And I knew at that point I was not in for a good time.
It's well, I think that's a good point, and I think that's definitely there. You know, Kirk being white, proclaimed as a god, showing them the error of their ways. A lot, you know, you kind of get the sense that they're sort of acting like children in some respects, and this is all stuff that people said and viewed Native Americans like and as.
I can't fault the, you know, Starship Commander for knowing about technology and medical stuff that's, you know, thousands, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years afterwards. That's fine. But yeah, it's difficult the way it's comes off in the, there are some implications that the show doesn't even think of that as a 2013 viewer. I can't be unaware of.
Well, I think that's actually, I think, where you can go with that is that,
yeah,
I don't think any of this was intentional.
No, I think, wouldn't say I would. It was just a product of its time.
And I think that Kirk being white is just because,
yeah,
William Shatner is white, and you know, that has nothing to do with it. I don't think. I think the problem with this episode is that a show made today would, the people making it would have realized that you could come to those interpretations, whereas in 1968 they didn't even think of it. Which, you know, I mean, there's a certain point where you kind of have to raise your hands and go, okay, this could be viewed as racist. It probably is racist, but it's not very egregious. It's not what they intended to do. And it is certainly not something that they knew was racist. You kind of have to use it on the basis of consciousness raising, right?
Of course.
You think about it in terms of like, you know, I always think about it in terms of like civil rights for black people or civil rights for gay people or transgender people or whatever. And so there's two ways that you can do that. You can act really angry and yell at people and call them racists and call them homophobes and call them all kinds of names and just get really upset and say that they're, you know, bigots and everything. And that's fine, but it doesn't really work. And then there's the other half of that, which is education, consciousness raising, you know, all of these, teaching them why the things they're doing are wrong. And so that's where I think this is coming from.
I mean, it reminds me, I remember as a kid, anytime like I would, you know, be watching an old movie with my parents and, you know, they'd have a very stereotypical black cook. Like my mom would, you know, very much explain like, look, that was how people viewed at the time. And, you know, that's not acceptable now. And, you know, we've, you know, changed. So it's one of those, you know, at the time this episode was made, I'm sure this was a very generous episode. I'm sure this is one which, and the people do come off having dignity, even if they're a little, you know, ignorant of stuff. They are shown to learn very quickly as soon as, you know, there's someone to teach them. So you know, they're not unable to do all of this.
I think a lot of what was feeding into this episode is just this idea that Native Americans lived in some sort of Garden of Eden paradise and they, you know, had a good life. And
it's noble savage stuff.
Exactly. It's noble savage stuff. It's fine as far as it goes. We realize now that that's
great white hope kind of thing. And that's, again, you know, as somebody who understands a bit about what 1968 or whatever was like, I understand where the episode is coming from. But as somebody in 2013, I do have to, you know, that jumped out at me.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Yeah. I don't know. It just I've said several times there are some episodes that I don't really get what the plot is, and this was one of them. So they're doing something with an asteroid, and they're just like, well, if we don't leave there in 30 minutes, you know, we'll never do it. But Kirk dicks around, you know, instead of just coming back later. I don't know why. Because he's Kirk.
Well, because otherwise it wouldn't have been an episode.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like there's no reason for him to have stayed around. Like that would make no sense.
They
like,
can come back.
Exactly. It waiting longer and getting into an adventure would mean that they missed this very precise window, and saving the planet would be, you know.
And of course, it's really interesting because, as it turns out, if they hadn't stayed, then the obelisk would have worked, and it would have destroyed the asteroid, and everything would have been fine.
Well, yeah, that's that. That's a thing.
So,
I didn't get what, like, Kirk goes into this temple, but it turns out that, like, saying Kirk to Enterprise is the password? How did, what did I miss? Did I see that bit wrong?
It's not very well explained.
Yeah.
But I will say that, you know, there's a couple things here. Number one, the Enterprise is on a mission because they know that this asteroid is going to hit impact this planet, and they're going, you know, the thing about asteroids is that, you know, if they take
Armageddon.
They take a lot of power and a lot of force to move, and so depending on how big they are, and so if you just move them off course a tiny fraction after, you know, they're millions of light years away or whatever, it's going to miss.
Yeah, the tiniest degree of thing will. Yeah. I mean, I get that, but then I couldn't figure out what this musical tone for the thing, what the obelisk meant, what Kirok's role was supposed to be, why Kirk to Enterprise opens the temple, why, you know,
Kirk to Enterprise opened the temple, they explained, because, and this is again, it's a problem with the third season in general, is that a lot of these episodes need just another rewrite, and they're a little flabby, they're a little sloppy, and so
it just
the passage of time doesn't make a whole lot of sense in this episode.
Yeah,
but the thing about the opening of the obelisk, opening of the temple, is that the symbols on the obelisk are musical notations, and so that is what opens the passageway. So the idea is that there's someone in the village or whatever that would understand what this meant, and when the time came, they would go and they would sing to the obelisk.
Kirk
Enterprise. It would open, and then it would, right. And so, and it wasn't even that. It was also the communicator sound effect as well. So, yeah, you just...
Look, I know, like, I could get that there would be some kind of coincidence, and that's fine, but there's coincidence and there's coincidence.
You just have to go with it. I mean, you know,
at that point, I didn't want to. That's the whole thing. Like, I didn't. There wasn't anything else in the episode. I can deal with a weaker point in an episode. There was stuff in the Romulan Commander one. What was the name of that?
The Enterprise incident?
Yes. There were some, you know, moments in Enterprise incident that I'm like, well, that was a little too apt, but I could deal with it because, you know, I was liking the rest of it. I didn't enjoy any of this episode, and so when it asked me to really stretch my disbelief, it hadn't proven itself worth my doing that.
And that's fair.
Yeah. And that was it. I mean, it had some nice moments. I loved Kirk's bird dress.
Well, the thing is, I think it's actually a nice episode for Kirk, I think, as a character in a lot of ways. And I think it's interesting because it does, again, if it had been gone through another rewrite, if it had been scripted a little less flabbily, I think it would have been interesting. You know, there's this idea that we've seen before that Kirk is like the best of the best. He's very, very intense. He has to be on all the time. He needs to be smart and capable and in control. And there's this idea that he never really gets a whole lot of rest. We've seen all this before. And so I do think it's interesting that Kirk losing his memory and sort of remembering his name and becoming Kirok, and is able to live in this idyllic paradise. And you know, we're just leaving that aside for the moment because it is in the episode, so we just have to accept that it is.
Honestly, he has a very pretty wife, and they're just kind of hanging out and
screwing
and inventing technologies. I think that is idyllic. I think that's pretty nice.
I think that's a lot of where the episode, I think, shines, if we can say that the episode shines at any point, is that it does give us a nice taste of what Kirk is lacking in his life. And, you know, maybe he'll take these lessons to some sort of heart.
At the same time, let's talk to about this side of paradise for a second, because that's one of Spock's only moments where he's legitimately happy, when he is romping around and having crazy sex with this woman and just in nature. Kirk says, you know, this seems like the first time I'm happy and relaxed. Both of them get that taken away because of their mission, you know. Spock takes it away from Kirk, Kirk takes it away from Spock. And I remember you said when we did that episode something like, even though Spock was happy, you know, there is a higher duty there, and Kirk knows enough to know that that's not for happy. You know, Spock doesn't like being happy. You know, Spock likes, you know, being useful.
Well, the other point I made too is that there's nothing that stops Spock from being happy. Spock could be happy at any point if he wanted to.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to.
Kirk could be happy at any point if he wanted to.
Yeah, but nobody, at the end of this episode, nobody makes Kirk come back.
They put his old personality into him.
No, it's not a personality.
Well,
McCoy finds that he has amnesia, and it lets us, you know, apparently they can cure amnesia. Yeah, fine. Dr. McCoy does his duty as a doctor and gives him his memories back. At this point, they don't know that any of this has happened.
No, certainly. But
so Kirk, when he gets his memories back, he immediately is like, okay, I'm a starship commander. Like, all right, I'm not buying this parallel at all.
I don't know. Either way, I think both episodes make it clear that just hanging out with a girlfriend is not either of their destinies, you know?
Absolutely.
Whether it's because, you know, and neither of them would be happy. Again, even, you know, Kirk with his memory, Spock with or without an alien parasite, you know, spore or whatever, they want to be on the Enterprise. Or more importantly, that's where they belong. It's sad that the Indian lady had to die along with their spot, you know, with Kirk's unborn kid. But, you know, I was wondering how they were going to resolve that, because I couldn't see her going on to the Enterprise, and I also couldn't see, I don't think for that time it would be comfortable to have him abandon a child.
Yeah, no, I don't think
either. Yeah, they would have been able to do that. They wouldn't have said, well, your daddy's a starship captain, and here's some, you know, dilithium every couple quarters for child support, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, we can talk about the character of Kirk's wife. I mean, I don't think that there's all that much really there, which is unfortunate, but she's really just a plot device. I don't really ever get a sense of her as a person. I mean, and so it's really kind of, it's interesting because there's not a lot of agency there for her. And I think that's interesting because we do get the sense that this may be a sexist culture, right? Because,
well, yeah, they definitely, she has a fiance. She was the, you know, the current medicine man or whatever. And, you know, they are betrothed. And when Kirk comes, you know, when he becomes the, you know, new medicine man, she basically says, look, I'm destined to be that, you know, his, whoever, you know, that guy is his wife. You know, I was supposed to marry you, but
doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah.
She's just supposed to be betrothed to the medicine man.
And, you know, and the former one is, of course, you know, the entire episode, he's very upset about this. And at one point he says to her, like, well, look, if you had the choice, you know, would you pick him or me? And he seems genuinely anguished at the question, and she does not answer it. And then when we see, but seeing the two of them together, she doesn't exactly mind being married to Kirk. And in fact, I think she's happier than she would have. You know, the two of them, I believe, do make a good match in that way. You know, she is able to appreciate Kirk for what he is, and he does, you know, appreciate her for who she is.
Because I think it's, well, a lot of that I think has to do with the fact that fundamentally Kirk is, he's a happy-go-lucky kind of guy.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
he's not mean, he's not an angry person, he's very sort of, I accept you as you are, you know, unless you're an evil computer. And, you know, he's just kind of he's an okay guy. And I think, you know, she appreciates that and she likes that. And the old medicine man is kind of a dick.
Yeah. And I mean, it's very clear.
And I don't know
that
there's anything else there, really.
It's very clear that, you know, the old medicine man had whatever technology level they'd gotten to. And again, Kirk is bringing mouth to mouth. He's bringing lanterns.
He certainly is.
Oh, you know, he's bringing all these things that he would remember as a 20 whatever century, you know.
Well, it's guy. That's the weird thing, though. It's not even like he's, I mean, I don't know. I find the technology part of this to be the least interesting, because he's not really bringing them any technology that's all that great. I mean, he basically invented an oil lamp. I mean, that's
But to somebody who doesn't, to a culture that doesn't have an oil lamp, that is a revolution.
No, I know. I'm not.
And it's anyway. That's.
I'm not discounting that. Oh, yeah. But I just think it's less important than.
But either way, he does come to this tribe as a savior, and he does come to them who is so much more advanced who they are, and he does change their way of life. And so to go between somebody who is very traditional and somebody who is, you know, legitimately brilliant, it's obvious that she's traded up, you know? Kirok has made her life much better.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I find that a little problematic, too.
Why?
I'm just going to say that because... I feel bad for this old medicine man who is just doing what he tried to do, and then suddenly this other dude comes in and basically says, "Hey, fuck your culture, I'm awesome. I'm gonna steal your girlfriend. Ha! I'm a god that bleeds." Like, I don't know, it just seemed a little...
None of these characters really come across as believable people, so it doesn't seem to matter that much.
And that's another... This may be a terrible food small portions kind of complaint, but yeah, that too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just didn't care.
And that's fair. That's fair. There's a couple production things that I want to talk about with this episode, because we've talked a lot about how Star Trek uses location shooting really well, and this episode is all location shooting, and it's wonderfully done.
It opens with like an outdoor crane shot. Like that I was surprised at.
Yeah, I mean it was interesting to me because they used location shooting, I think, in like 4 episodes in the second season. And I don't know if I should tell you how many episodes they use location shooting for in this season, but it's...
Less than 4.
It's less than 4. And so they blew a lot of money on this episode.
Yeah, I don't feel like it was worth it, but I mean, the look of the episode as far as... I thought it was very poorly directed, but the outdoor scenes were pretty, and that does add... I mean, we're talking about... If this were an obvious soundstage, it wouldn't feel as much of a paradise, but it...
Yeah,
actually is. It's a very... It looks very sunny, very warm, very comfortable. It looks like the best camping weekend of your life. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that really, you know, that was a wise choice for them to use the budget on that, because otherwise, I think this episode could have been one of the worst Star Trek episodes instead of just sort of an episode.
Yeah. So instead of the directing, acting, and writing and scene being bad, just the directing, acting, and writing were bad.
Sure.
They weren't up to their normal standards. Even the mind meld scene sucked. And like, mind meld is normally like one of the coolest things. The Horta scene, the Horta mind meld, is one of the greatest Star Trek moments, I think. Like,
that could probably be a motto for the entire third season: not up to their usual standards.
Yeah, like that original one is Leonard Nimoy firing all cylinders. This is him and everybody else just phoning it in. Yeah. I got the sense they didn't even really like the episode.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah, like, they just was like, "Yeah, we do this crappy enough, maybe it won't really air."
And I think, you know, going along with that, I think one of the one legitimate thing, you know, complaint that I have about the episode that I because I kind of find this an episode in general, but the music I don't like. I think it was Alexander Courage who composed the music for this episode, and he did things like Amok Time, and he, you know, I mean, that's
really, which is awesome.
This is just a problem in general I find with a lot of the third season, is that a lot of their music cues are off, and there are a lot of sort of comedy music cues in this episode which seem completely out of place for what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, Kirk and his wife are having sort of a tender moment, and suddenly you get like these brass instruments going, and you know, it just comes across as like very weird. I don't understand a lot of the musical choices in this episode.
I thought it was most obvious in the scene when they're trying to attack this meteor. That whole sequence was edited horribly. Like, the timing on it was completely off. Things were just kind of like scenes were mashing into each other. I wasn't 100% sure what was going on even through that. Like, that was just, that especially was just a really badly done scene.
Yeah, yeah. All right, is there anything else to say about this one, or should we move on?
Please, let's never talk about this again. Eventually, like, we need to trail the tears this episode.
What? Wow. Okay. How many triples would you give this?
Two.
Four. I'll give it four.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't hate it as much as you.
I know.
All right, let's move on to And the Children Shall Lead.
I liked this episode a lot more when it was called Miri.
I was thinking I liked it a lot more when it was called Charlie X, but I didn't like Charlie X.
Yeah. No,
you can't even talk. This episode short-circuited your brain.
Do you remember that episode of The Twilight Zone with, like, the It's a Good Thing You Wished Him Into the Cornfield?
Yeah.
And, like, Village of the Damned and all. Aren't those great?
Sure.
Yeah, like, what the... why did this episode need to happen? It was just... I did not have a fun time, this weekend.
Alternate third season motto. Why did this episode need to happen? Yeah, it's not very good. And it's not very good in a way that Star Trek is so frequently not very good in the third season. It's basically has no plot. It's very boring. There are no motivations for anything that is happening. There's no resolution. And it just feels like everybody is going through the motions.
Yeah. I was thinking the other... You remember I was joking the other week when the caveman one on Spock's brain. And I was saying, like, oh, you know, finally first, you know, big thing. And he's a Star Trek fan. And he said, oh, you know, I think you overestimate how much of a prestige gig being on Star Trek was at this point. For these kids. Some of these kids had to be into Star Trek, though. And they're in this episode. Like... I think it would. Some of them had to have thought it was cool to be talking to Captain Kirk.
Well, funny you should mention that, because Tommy was actually the same actor who played Kirk's nephew all the way back in Operation Annihilate. Yeah. And another one of the, I think one of the girls was. Now this is interesting. I don't know if you know who Melvin Belli is. Yes.
Aww.
He was the guy.
He was a great person, from what I know.
He was. He was the guy who played Gorgon. Okay, the shimmering green guy that the children, you know, use the lines from Macbeth to bring about.
I forgot about that character.
And as you should, he was played by Melvin Belli, who was this really famous lawyer.
Really?
Yeah, and so this is the interesting thing, and this is what I find really interesting about watching old television shows in general is, you know, it really makes you realize if you have guest stars on television that are sort of famous when the show is on, but who stands the test of time and who doesn't.
Yeah.
Because he was a pretty big household name in the 60s, and nobody knows who he is now.
Yeah, I've never heard
of him. I didn't even know who he was. I sort of realized this.
I assumed as he I was reading an actor, about this, you know, episode. Time,
no, but... he was not an actor at all. And it really sort of, I think, feeds into his performance, because he's got this very deep stentorian sort of voice and delivery. And
I'm sure he was chosen because he did very elaborate, you know, courtroom. I'd assume it would be some reason.
Don't know why he was chosen, honestly. I think because maybe he was famous and wanted to be on the show.
Yeah,
honestly,
it was probably. I mean, Star Trek does kind of have a tradition of having people who love the show being on it. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg had the same thing, right? From other guest stars, especially once, you know, Next Generation hit. You know, people had grown up with it.
Absolutely, yeah. So that itself is interesting, that he is on here, and then he plays this sort of very boring character that doesn't really have a lot to do, and it's just that, I mean, basically, like, the first time he appears is when they beam the children up to the ship, and they're doing their, like, Macbeth witch scene, and which is just, what am I watching? And he comes and he's green and he's basically this huge info dump. And it's just like the most tremendously terrible thing I've ever seen. And
I don't even know by the end of the episode who he is or why the children, you know, crying destroys him and makes him melt or what.
I have no idea.
He was I don't understand the nature of what he was. He was just the villain of the episode who appeared when no one was looking to be mysterious and who died when the plot was over because they only had 5 minutes left.
He seems like one of those energy character things that are like pure evil, like from Wolf in the Fold, right? Like he's just this force of evil that just hates everything and wants to destroy everything.
I love those.
And so that's what his motivation here is in this episode. He finds children on this planet that maybe he was stuck on this planet and decided that he could really snow these children, and so decided to turn them over to his side, and they become creepy and dead eyes and all that.
And making then wanking motions gets them to, you know.
Wasn't even going to bring that up, but
I had to. It was all I could see.
Miming the action of male masturbation is what causes them to take people over. Okay, sure.
I have to say, if Bewitched had that premise, I would think it would have been even more popular.
And they choose, maybe. And they choose, like, really weird things to do with
Well, they're kids, to be fair.
The knives.
I loved that. Sulu was like, oh, I'm going to change. And, like, it's like a circle of daggers. And he's, like, terrified. And this is a favorite of the show that we haven't seen in a while. Uhura is old in the mirror. And she's freaking out about it.
Well, we've
that.
Never seen that, have we?
We've seen a lot of Back to Charlie X. That was one of the hallucinations he gave people. What was the episode where
Return to Tomorrow, I think, or was that, I forget which one it was, but there was the woman in the mirror.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that they become old or something like that? Or what was
Oh, yeah, the deadly years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The deli years.
Yeah.
I feel for like a ham sandwich. I'm going to stop at like the place by you.
Sure. Yeah.
They're really nice there.
So, I mean, I think like, you know, it's such a bad episode because I was watching it and I was thinking to myself, wow, I really want Kirk to punch these kids.
Well, I have to say,
like, I know, like, I really wanted him to. Like, I was not like, no, you need to stop them. You need to punish them. You need to send them to their room or spank them or do anything that you normally do with kids. No, I wanted to see a scene where Kirk hauls off and cracks one of them in the face with his fist.
Well, there
like, that is what I wanted to see.
There was a point where, you know, Kirk and Spock are talking and I don't remember which one of them says it, but it's basically like, look, we got to stop those kids. And, you know, we don't want to, but if we need to, we'll have to kill them. And the other one like nods like last resort. I'm not going to kill a kid, but, you know, they've taken over our ship. They're going to destroy this entire colony. Like, that's better. You know, the better alternative. Like, I was surprised.
Sure. Let's murder children. I mean, and I don't have a problem with that.
I don't.
Because they were annoying.
I have definitely heard me and many kids that I would like to hit by a bus. That's very sad. We shouldn't joke about this.
Whatever. The other, I mean, maybe it just feeds into my general dislike of children in general, but, you know, ugh, whatever. And the other thing, maybe I'm like McCoy, because at the very end of the episode, McCoy says something like, oh, good, the kids are crying. I'm like, that's a weird thing to say.
Well, because he hates kids and he likes them. I love that. He's like, we're going to, you know, solve this problem by showing you pictures of your dead parents and making you realize you killed them. Happy end. And it's like, how could these kids even like begin to be healed from that trauma, even though they were being, you know, manipulated by someone? They still have to live with the guilt of having killed their parents.
I would like to see a follow-up episode with them 20 years later.
I was gonna say, this is something that none of them are going to ever recover from. Really,
they're all drug addicts, they're all like, you know, petty shoplifters and all this kind of stuff.
I have to say, the kid who requests a chocolate marble and pistachio ice cream with peach, he had to have been on drugs, because that is not a good comment. That would, number one, I love the ice cream card, and what the fuck are those desserts? But So you have, you know, Nurse Chapel says, oh, I'll surprise you with something. And he gets like coconut and vanilla, which is not my favorite, but is at least more edible than chocolate, pistachio, and peach. And she says, well, that was your unpleasant surprise. And I'm like, no, his entire family being murdered was his unpleasant surprise. That was an ice cream he didn't like.
I didn't understand that at all. Like, what was she talking about? Like, was that a concept in like raising children in the 60s that had been lost to time where you need to give them unpleasant and pleasant surprises?
I mean, I would think, you know, again, I'm fine with it. Like, well, you know, you did ask for a surprise. It's not what you want, but okay. You know, that'll teach you to say whatever. Like, if you have something in mind, you know, pick it. Like, you know, you've had that guy who was, you know, that boyfriend who's like, where should we go to out to eat? Oh, wherever. And then you go out to eat and he's like, I mean, I guess I could find something. Like, that's what I think she's trying to stop.
Okay.
That kid would totally be that guy.
But why does it need to be in the
episode? I don't know. Because he couldn't have had another scene of, you know, the kid making a masturbation gesture. You know, there were only like a dozen allowed in one episode.
That was a standards of practice thing, I think.
The Catholic League would have, you know, given it a no if it had been.
I think the Catholic League would have been given a yes, Richard.
Well, yeah, that's true.
The other thing I think is really problematic about the episode is Kirk and Spock seem stupid for a lot of it, and they just are running around. And you know, there's that long, interminable scene in the middle of the episode where Kirk and Spock are on the bridge, and you know, he's giving orders, and no one is listening to them. And it's like 5 minutes long, and he just keeps screaming, "I've lost command! I've lost command!" And he's like crying, and he's like ripping his shirt off, and like running around in circles and getting on his back and kicking his legs. And I mean, I'm making this up, but he may
not
as well.
Much.
Like, that would have been more interesting than like watching him. Like, I don't know. It was just like, it would like go to Uhura, like touching her face and being like, I'm old. And then it would go to Sulu, who was like, oh my God, knives in space. And then it would like go back to Kirk, who was like, command, no one's listening to me. This is my most horrible fear. And then it would go back to Spock and he's just like, yes, this is interesting. I am going to stand here because I am Spock. And like,
and not only do they do that, they go into engineering and they have the same exact sequence again.
Yeah, where like Scotty threatens to murder them. I'm like, okay, fine. Like, and then they get into the turbo lift when they go down from the bridge, Kirk and Spock, and they get really close to each other. And I'm like, are they going to make out? Because that would make this episode really more interesting all of a sudden. But that doesn't happen. So that was really disappointing. And yeah, then they go down to engineering and Scotty's just like, hey, I'm going to kill you. And they're just like, okay, we're going to fight you then. And I don't know. It's just so disheartening. This whole episode is just so sad.
Yeah. I just didn't.
But where did it go wrong? Like, where did this episode go wrong? Like,
well, but you have to, that implies that there was a point where it could have gone right. I don't think there was enough. This episode was so half-assed in every way that I guess the thing is, it doesn't really, the villain is so amorphous that I don't really get what his plan is. I don't get who he is. I don't get what his goals are.
I understand his plan. I mean, it seemed to be that he is a malevolent force of evil.
But you can
hang an interesting episode on that as long as everything else around it is smart and makes sense. I don't have a problem with that because that's fine. That's the standard Star Trek thing.
Yeah.
Whatever. My issue is like, and his plan makes some sort of sense because he apparently can convince children to do his evil deeds for him, and they're going to go to this planet. And he said something about like there's a million possible, you know, allies or something.
Friends,
yeah. And I think the implication there is that was the number of children on the planet, and so
yeah,
they were going to murder all the adults, and then he was going to have this army of children that was just going to sow discord around the galaxy. Okay, fine. That's all super great. The problem with this episode, I think, is in the execution, and it's also in the fact that it seemed like the person who wrote this came up with this basic premise and then did not have any sort of actual 50-minute plot to hang it on. And so you just get a lot of scenes of our main characters running around the ship acting stupid, and then you get scenes of children who are jerking off. And it's just like, I feel like there's so much about this episode that really doesn't work. And I don't know why they didn't realize it. And I think maybe at this point they just didn't care.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems very strange.
Again, it seemed like a half-assed version of Miri, of Charlie X, of that Twilight Zone episode of Village of the Damned. And that they just kind of, they needed an episode. It was the third season and no one was watching anyway.
And that's the really sad thing, because, you know, a lot of the problems with the third season in general had to do with a lot of the production staff leaving. And so you had Herb Salau, who had been the executive producer on the first two seasons. He left. Robert Justman, who left, I think, in like the midway of the third season, and he had been with the show and since the beginning. Roddenberry was basically not involved at all. He was still collecting a check, but he wasn't really all that interested in it.
And I assume the actors themselves weren't that into it. Like, I know how
the actors knew what. I think the actors realized the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, for
especially once they started getting the quality of scripts that they were getting, I think they sort of were like, okay, this is what's happening.
Like I said, the Indian episode, it seems like they actively didn't like the episode, and they were just like, well, you know, we're just going to do this as long as we can. But, you know, that I almost get the sense they're just, everybody just is treating this as just a paycheck and they're just going to run it out as long as they can. But there's no real reason to
This is the interesting thing, I think, about the third season in general. And maybe we can come back to this when we're completely done with all of it. But And the Children Shall Lead, I think, really indicates some fundamental problems with the construction of the third season as it, you know, on the production side, because you had people that had come onto the show in the third season not really knowing what Star Trek was about, maybe not even seeing it, you know, even to the degree where the director of photography, I think, leaves after 10 episodes or something and is replaced by someone else, and it like completely changes the look of the show.
Okay.
You had a producer who came in who had not worked on the show before, and
directors who don't really know the show's style.
The writing staff is they have people writing episodes. I mean, DC Fontana wrote The Enterprise and Incident. She doesn't write another script the entire season. That's it for her. She comes back in the animated series and turns in some good stuff, but you know, she's done.
Did she write for any other shows, by the way?
I think she did, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure.
She must have.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a problem with Star Trek in the third season, because I think a lot of the people that were working on it were just working on a television show. And we're starting to see the cracks, I think, especially with And the Children Shall Lead, where the interesting thing about the original series is that it has stood the test of time to a large degree, because the first two seasons are so good. And whereas a lot of the third season feels like workmanlike 60s television, and
you know, maybe it was a lot of people's first job. If you have a low budget TV series,
well, it wasn't their first job. I mean, that's the thing. It was just like, they're just working on a television show and they don't necessarily care. I mean, how much 60s TV do you watch?
No, exactly.
I don't watch much of it, because a lot of it has not stood the test of time.
I'm trying to think of ones like The Prisoner holds up, Dick Van Dyke holds up, but that's even early 60s, like very few and far between. Like,
yeah. I mean, you have like Mission Impossible, maybe things like that. But on the whole, a lot of 60s TV doesn't hold up, and especially dramatic TV doesn't hold up. And so I think that, you know,
Dragnet.
Yeah.
But to be fair, a lot of my love of Dragnet is a love of the fact that 40 years later, it's almost campy.
Yeah. And that's campy. And I think that's also where I think a lot of the original series getting its reputation as being sort of a camp fest, I think, comes from the third season as well.
But then again, I mean, there's good camp and there's bad camp. And while, you know, Harry Mudd is wonderfully good camp, this episode is just, it's not interesting to watch, even though Harry Mudd's ridiculous.
I know that you consider the Mudd episodes to be camp, but I don't, because they were intended to be funny, and I don't think camp is generally intended to be funny.
There's different types of camp, because I mean, the character of Mudd is very over the top, very flamboyant, wearing ridiculous outfits. I mean, he does have a camp sensibility about him. Is one that's using it, and you know, the over the topness of Mudd's character is what makes that episode. The fact that he is this ridiculously hilarious cap episode is making it, you know, it's a different kind of camp than Spock's Brain, which is very earnest with it but is very over the top. But through sheer bizarreness, like the way these alien women are acting or the way you have robot Spock is so silly but so memorable and cool to look at that it's good camp. This is silly and ridiculous and unseriousness, and it's not interesting.
I guess for me it's that, you know, I don't really have a good working definition of camp, and it camp really seems to be one of those words that just people throw out and don't really have any conception of what they're saying. Like, because I really fundamentally disagree with you that And the Children Shall Lead is campy in any way. Like, I don't think it's campy. I just think it's bad.
Well, I should clarify, maybe bad camp is not camp in a way, if you know what I mean. Like, so
I mean, camp,
it's something which I see could have been camp. And if it were camp, it would have been interesting, but it fails to even be – it's not interesting enough to be campy.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that.
Maybe that's a better formulation of that.
The other thing I want to ask you is, do you think Star Trek knows what to do with children? Because we've seen episodes like Miri, which – Miri's a pretty good episode. I enjoy that episode. But I think I enjoy it a lot in spite of the children. And Charlie X is an episode that features a child, and that's not very good.
Well, to be fair, to get a couple of things out of that, I would say, Charlie X features a – I wouldn't say it features a child because he's supposed to be 16. He's a teenager, fair. And I think him being a teenager is very explicitly a part of that. And Miri, the character of Miri and the young Ernest Borgnine look-alike are supposed to be just at the cusp of, you know, between childhood and teenagehood. They're going through puberty at that point, and they're more interesting characters for that because of what they're dealing with. The little kids in that episode, they're supposed to be seen almost animalistically. Like, they're supposed to be just these weird, unrestrained, almost scary kind of things because you have the it's very difficult to want to hurt a child, that is, especially for, you know, good characters.
It
such
is?
I
must be doing things wrong then.
You've just yelled at a bunch of teenagers. That doesn't count as hurting a child. Especially a bunch of, you know, moral characters such as the crew of the Enterprise, even if a child is attacking you, it's going to be a lot to overcome that reticence that you have because, you know, they are much weaker than you. They are, you know, innocent, all of those things. So they almost be so in Miri, I think it does effectively make them creepy. I don't think this one does because they're just a bunch of kids yelling and, you know, putting daggers onto the screen. Like, they it was stupid.
It's stupid. I think that's kind of the final takeaway, is that it's just stupid.
Yes, this is a stupid episode.
All right, well, I don't think there's really anything else to say about it. It's just bad. Let's just move on.
Okay.
How many triples would you give this one?
3, because I hated the Indian one that much.
I really don't like this episode. I think maybe, I don't know, because there's still bad stuff to come. It's hard. Maybe
we can go into negative tribbles.
Oh, we can? Oh, great. Okay, so
Trust me, why do you think I've not given any negative tribble scores yet?
I don't know. I didn't even think about it. Okay, good. I'll give it a 2 then.
Oh, suddenly we've have a very strict rating system. I mean, we could give it 3 billion tribbles, or it could be it's all right number of tribbles. Like, I didn't think we were being at all serious.
I'm sorry if I want to take the conception of this show seriously.
I'm very surprised that we're keeping on tribbles because I just kind of half-assed that when we had our first episode. And I didn't know that was going to be a thing.
That's how things happen, Richard.
That's how things happen. This is how, the light bulb was invented.
There you go.
Edison was like, motherfuckers, I'm going to make a light bulb. And everyone, and he was just drunk. But I
would have rather seen that than And the Children Shall Lead. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, next week, we have a pair of pretty good episodes. Is There in Truth No Beauty? And Spectre of the Gun. So we'll see you then.